Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Greg Tennyson has over 30 years worth of experience working as an innovative CPO for multiple high-profile corporations. He is a founding member of the Bay Area Procurement Council and has sat on a number of advisory boards for emerging high-tech companies as well as professional organizations. Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Kelly, thanks again for your time today and the opportunity to share on the Sourcing Hero podcast. I love the concept, by the way.
Absolutely. Well, I can't take credit for that. The credit for that absolutely goes to UNA. And it is such a good idea because it's such a broad concept that sparks such different ideas in everybody that it has led us down some very unique paths as far as these conversations go. And I'm sure yours will be no exception.
I look forward to it.
Excellent. So let's just get started by giving everybody listening in an opportunity to know you better. Can you tell me a little bit about your current role?
Well, it's interesting. As you know, I'm in the process of transitioning. Currently, as of today, I'm the VP Corporate Services at VSB Global. But as of Monday, the 2nd of August, I'll be transitioning to the Senior VP Strategy and Procurement at Fairmarket. Fairmarket is based in Boston. They're a tech startup. They use automation and data to transform the procurement enterprise, making it faster, easier, and more cost-effective than the traditional, mostly manual methods that are in play today. I've been advising them for the last 4 years, so it's a natural transition.
Excellent. Now, obviously, we've talked about you've held some roles on different sides of the buy side, provider side. You know, as you said, you're in transition. How do you see your overall professional journey as having led you to the role that you're moving from and the role that you're moving towards?
You know, as I reflect back on the last, let's say, 24 years, I've been at the chief procurement officer level, a VP. Over the last 20 years, I've been advising nascent pre-IPO procurement technology companies like Aravo, Coupa, CXO Nexus, Scout RFP, Supplari today, who just announced the Microsoft acquisition, and of course, Fairmarket. I'm one of four, as you mentioned, one of four founding members of the Bay Area Procurement Council. I'm fortunate, inducted into the SIG Hall of Fame in 2018. I was the CPO of the year from Arden Partners in 2019, Everest Group Pinnacle Award winner 2019. So suffice to say, I've spent my career in the space, some amazing logos on my resume, Oracle, Salesforce.com, most recently VSB Global. So I'd like to say that I've accumulated, 30 years of experience that allow me to take the next steps. And it's interesting, the role that I'm moving to is kind of juxtaposed to the role that I have today. So for the last 30 years, I've been on the buy side, one of many roles that I've had, but I've been on the buy side. The role that I'm moving to allows me to go to the sell side. So I'll be partnering with the chief revenue officer at Fairmarket, actually carrying a quota. But I'll be partnering with Steve Sovic at Fairmarket, and then with Victor Kush, who's the head of product, the CMO, Ben Winner, and of course the other two founders, Kevin Frechette and Tariq Aluri, on just positioning the company in the marketplace. So It's been an interesting journey and one that allows me to take these next steps, which I'm very excited about moving to the other side.
Well, and I feel like I have to tease you about that. And I do this in all honesty, having been teased for the exact same thing myself a number of years ago when I switched from being a procurement practitioner to being a consultant at mTORIS. You're officially switching to the dark side, Greg. You're going to have to adjust yourself to a fair amount of ribbing and teasing from everybody that's still on the practitioner side, but I'm sure it'll all be well-intentioned and good-natured.
You know, it's interesting. Is it the dark side? Because I'll still get to partner.
Not once you're over here.
I'll still get to partner with my CPO network in sharing best practice, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. And the Bay Area Procurement Council enabled that, geez, has it been 20 years? Approximately 20 years ago. Actually, it was 2004 when Oracle acquired PeopleSoft is when I got involved in the Bay Area Procurement Council. So it's been 17 years. But I thoroughly enjoy espousing best practice, technology. So as you know, Kelly, it's technology, people, process. Maybe yes, one precedes the other, but being able to talk to my network, as you do, through this podcast and the other engagements that you have, that's what keeps me engaged, invigorated, kind of excited about our profession because change is happening. I think with COVID, you know, the distributed workforce, we're moving in a different direction around up-leveling skills, soft skills with the procurement talent, but also technology. I think we're at the pivotal point of where technology is going within the procurement space. It's going to be more AI-enabled, more automated, optimized to meet the needs of the business. So exciting times ahead.
Absolutely. And, you know, to your point about change, and this is not a procurement-specific trend at all. In fact, depending on the source you happen to be reading from on any given day, we're hearing now that somewhere north of 40% of professionals, meaning all professionals, not just procurement, are planning to change their jobs this year, or at least seriously thinking about it. What do you think it is that's driving that trend? Is it the transition back to work? Is it the, you know, virtual or hybrid work environment, or do you think it's something else?
Yeah, I think it's a number of factors depending on the individual. For me, it really boiled down to a concept of QTR, quality time remaining. It's a concept that was shared with me, a month or two ago by Stuart Booth. And I don't know if it was Stuart or actually Wayne Huizenga of Blockbuster fame that is the origin of QTR. But I looked at my quality time remaining, and I'm admittedly at the twilight of my career. I've been in the space for over 30 years. I'm not going to give you the exact number, but I've been in the space a long time. And I reflect on what I want to do with the remaining time in my career and how I want to contribute that and who I want to partner with. And I came to the realization that the joy that, you know, I have every day waking up is talking to tech startups, nascent pre-IPO tech startups who are very entrepreneurially focused, very agile, very customer-centric focused. And with the digital transformation that is afoot today, and I think it's accelerating, I figured, why not go do something fun with my remaining time?
No, and it's interesting, because I've actually not come across this concept of quality time remaining. When you think about any employer, now this could be a company, it could be an actual team manager, what is it now, especially in procurement, that you think companies and hiring managers can do to really attract people to want to spend either their quality time remaining or the next phase of their professional journey inside of their unique organization or team?
Yeah, interesting question. The distributed workforce where people work remote, and they could be working remote, you know, in a home office or in a vacation rental, wherever they might be. I think we've demonstrated certainly over the last, 15, 16 months that individuals can be highly productive because they don't have necessarily the distraction. The challenge that we have for procurement is in order to play that trusted advisor role, it requires a level of engagement. and you have a level playing field as long as everyone's distributed, what's going to happen, 2 months, 3 months, next week, when companies start to bring back their employees back to campus? It's going to create a dynamic. And I'm of the mindset that there's two imperatives today in order to get in front of that. We need to invest in the talent and make sure that they have the soft skills necessary to be truly effective in a hybrid model, distributed workforce model. And two, technology is going to play a key role. Technology needs to embrace what we've been talking about for the last, 3, 5 years around AI, machine learning, RPA, robotic process automation. And it needs to take the heavy lift off of both the customer, the internal customer, the supplier, and the procurement professional, and begin to do some of that heavy lift absent their involvement. And it becomes more report out, a dashboard for the procurement professional to action as opposed to doing the action themselves. So again, soft skill development, we need to really focus on making sure our people are prepared for the next normal, whatever that might be. And I would suggest it's a hybrid model where, I don't know if it's 60-40, 50-50, 30-70, but a large portion of our employees, I would suggest, will remain remote because there's benefit from a real estate perspective, the affinity programs, the cafe programs, all the programs that companies offer by putting employees at home, keeping them at home, there's that savings as well, the productivity improvement to them because they don't have the lost commute time, et cetera. But technology also is going to play a key role in this transition of the workplace.
No, it definitely is. And one of the things that I think everybody is interested to see, and you're actually about to live through, is I think that there's something different about taking an existing team and needing to adjust to finding a way for that team to work hybrid or virtually doing things that they had been doing before those conditions changed, versus having an existing team with culture and traditions and dynamics and new things to be learned and needing to integrate someone into that who's not physically on the ground with them all the time, right? You discussed the fact that Fairmarket is in fact based in Boston, right? But you're based currently West Coast. And so there's time zone differences. There's simply physical distance, or you can't pop your head over a cube or stick your head in somebody's office to help you adjust during those early days. Do you have any sort of either things that you're planning to do yourself or ways that you're preparing yourself to try to get through that initial transition without physically being on the ground with this team you're joining?
Yeah, great questions. With regard to Fairmarket, I have no concerns at all. I've been working with Kevin, with Tarek, with Victor and Steve now. Well, the founders for 4 years, Steve most recently. I have no concerns. I feel like they're an extension of my family today. I know them quite well. Plus, with collaboration tools at BSB, we are heavy reliant on Microsoft Teams. With the advances in Zoom and some other tools, RingCentral out there, and the acquisition they've made with Five9, I don't see any issues. I do acknowledge onboarding a new resource within the team has to be approached differently. You think about how it used to play out. An individual would start, they'd go into, a full day or 2 day, maybe even a week immersion program where they get assimilated into the organization. I think companies will need to figure out with a new hire how they can most effectively do that, because you want to avoid the churn, the unnecessary attrition of resource. Absolutely. Because of the significant upfront investment in recruiting, hiring, training, assimilating somebody into the organization. I've seen numbers in the past where you look at somebody's annualized salary and the cost to attract, recruit, hire, process, onboard, and assimilate in could be somewhere 1.5-2 times multiple of their actual annual salary. So I think companies have to be smarter about how they onboard employees. But with respect to Fairmarket, they're part of the family. I don't see any issues personally for myself.
And I actually can imagine as I listen to, you know, you describing this, and I try to think about putting myself in your shoes, I suppose there's actually potentially an advantage to trying to integrate remotely, especially in a sense where you already know the team, right? Because there can't be any casual like, oh, we'll deal with it when he gets here. Guess right. what? He's not coming. Like we actually, there has to be a plan. You have to be very proactive. Time has to be set aside. Plans have to be made. There's sort of no forgiveness when you're trying to bring in somebody that's, you know, you can't just say, oh, you know, just sit next to me for the first couple of days. We'll kind of figure it all out. That's a crutch that would exist when people are physically together in person that is not a fallback for doing it virtually. Well, maybe we'll have to check in with you and find out how it went. This is, I think there are a lot of people that are in the same exact boat as you. That have chosen now as a time to move for all kinds of reasons. Some people completely changing industries and career types. And so I suspect that sometime in the not too distant future, there's going to be a huge amount of discussion and study that comes out about all the different kinds of transitions that have happened as a result of the last 18 months. I think we're about to learn an awful lot about how people really work together and what really makes the difference.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it would be a great case study for HBR or even maybe the Wall Street as you reflect back on the last 18 months and as, you know, there's this anticipatory churn within the workforce of anywhere from, I've seen 42% in the Wall Street article. Mm-hmm. I've seen other organizations, other surveys, but it will be interesting to look back. I think, again, how a company onboards and is able to retain new talent into the organization. And also maybe the larger issue is how they retain their talent today, given the distributed workforce model, will be very telling. But I do think technology is going to play a key role in tethering the individual. And I don't mean that in a draconian way, but technology is an enabler, and how it makes that transition easier, both collaborative tools, the technology that they use to do their job, how they engage with the business. And, you know, you touched on it, you know, not having the hallway conversation, the water cooler conversation, or sitting next to somebody will be different. And it, in my mind, it needs to play out through technology coupled with the soft skills in order to retain talent, develop talent.
Absolutely. And to that point of talent, this is another cause that is very near and dear to your heart. And it's actually, I think, going to allow us a perfect transition to start talking about this idea of sourcing heroism that I discuss with everybody that joins me on the podcast. So we've talked a little bit about you being a founding member of the Bay Area Procurement Council, but your time there was spent at least in part mentoring other members of the council. And then, of course, we know that you've been an advisor to technology companies in the procurement space. I think there are probably a lot of people that would consider advisory roles and mentoring roles as an opportunity to be heroes to the individuals and teams that you work with. What is one or two of your favorite pieces of advice that you like to share? Maybe let's do this. Maybe a piece of advice on the practitioner side, right? And then a piece of advice that's a favorite one to give or a favorite question to ask on the advisory board or the provider side.
Yeah, interesting. You know, as a leader, we have a responsibility to pay it forward, to give back. And throughout my career, I've tried to do that multitude of ways by speaking at conferences, by writing articles, by advising tech startups, but also developing the team. And really understanding, assessing what investments are necessary. I always look at people, process, technology, and depending on the maturation of the company, the function, it may determine where you start. But as I've landed at Oracle, at Salesforce.com, and at VSP, most recent, I've always started with first listening to my customer, my internal customer, the external customer, the supplier, interviewing the team, listening to understand what the team is telling me. So you learn from this discovery process, and then you start leading, and then you develop a plan. I've always had a 100-day plan, transition plan, where to invest based on listening, learning, and then leading in the organization. So, I mean, my advice would be intentionally pause and take stake of where the organization, where the function is today. Look at its culture, its values, its mission, vision statements, but really understand kind of the DNA, the internal workings of the organization, and interview, interview people, get perspectives, understand. You know, I'm a parent. Both my children are adults. One, 37, just turned 37, and the other is, I think, will be 34, quick math, this year. But I've learned one thing, one truism in life is there's three sides to a story: their story, my story, and the truth, right? So just maintain the right filter when interviewing and gaining those perspectives, but listen, learn, and then lead would be my advice. And then from an advisory standpoint, boy, that's a great question. As I've advised, the list of logos that I've had the fortune to partner with, to interact with, I'm always amazed by the entrepreneurial spirit and their focus on getting things done and how agile they are. And that's epitomized with Kevin Tarek and Victor at Fairmarket. Interesting story. They reached out to me 4 years ago. I met them at a SIG event in Washington, D.C. They were in the lobby, and as I was walking out from one of the conference meetings, they engaged me and we had conversation. But I look back 4 years ago, what their focus was then versus what it is today. And they really are being disruptive in the space. Their approach, I think, is incredible. And that's why, I've decided to join. But it's really to learn from them. They have a different perspective. They may not always come from the procurement practice, but they have a point of view that has been garnered, learned from numerous engagements, and they have a business case. So I would encourage all of the leaders within the procurement space to listen to the startups. I always take the phone calls, the cold calls, because I always learn from them. They have a perspective of where the technology is going, where the offering needs to be positioned, and they try to differentiate themselves from others. So I have always found it insightful to take those phone calls, and it's something I would encourage. Take time out of your calendars, and I know it's challenging, but take a cold call just to understand the tech offering and how it potentially could be leveraged. And it's been successful for me, not only on a personal front, but professionally from a practice standpoint, because we've been able to influence features, functions, their product roadmap, and more align their product offering with the needs of the company. So, at Salesforce, we were an earlier adopter of Coupa, and we helped influence Coupa's roadmap back early in the day. So it's been very advantageous to engage with the startups.
Well, I want to go back to one of the things that you said, and I think it really does apply everywhere, right? Buy side, provider side, personal, professional. But I want to make sure we don't gloss over it, because I think it's a deceptively hard thing to do well all the time. And that's listen. I'm going to be honest. I struggle with this. I make a very concerted effort to be an excellent listener. I try to, sort of whole body listening, as they call it in my kids' elementary school. Pay attention if you're on video, watch someone's body language, see how they're moving, look at their face while they're talking. It's so easy, and I think easier now than ever, given the last couple of years that we've been through. We're all so pegged in action mode. We're like, okay, and then what do I do? And then what do I do? And then what do I do? And if you're doing it right, active listening is a task. It truly is an action, and it requires focus, and it requires a great deal of energy. But I think it's very easy, given how busy most people are and how divided their time is, not to think of listening as a task. Does that make sense, Greg? Do you know what I'm saying? I want to make sure we really double down on this for people, because I think it's a critical point.
It does. I think my pivot point, my personal journey, is I'm hearing impaired. I wear a hearing device, both ears. And I think as my hearing started to deteriorate, and I won't get into a lot of personal background, but as it started to be diminished, it became a skill that I had to focus more on my energy until I got hearing aids. Now that I have hearing aids, even hearing aids only help to some extent. So because of my own personal journey, I've had to double down on active listening. So I not only listen to the spoken word, but to your point, body language, the tonality. When I present, I try to present in multiple fashions. So for the tactile learner, for the visual learner, et cetera. So it's actually helped me from a listening and from a presenting standpoint, because I know personally I'm challenged. So I try to mitigate those challenges for others because of my own experience.
That's amazing, Greg. I had no idea. I think there's a great deal that we can learn from you in that, right? Because for many of us who don't have any kind of hearing impairment, you sort of take it for granted. You think, well, I'm sitting in the room and, you know, your sounds are going in my ears. But are you listening? It really is something that I appreciate the way you reframe that in terms of something becomes a challenge. And so you put more energy on top of it to be able to do it. But then you truly benefit from having a more active and engaged listening experience. So as important as my initial point about listening was, I really appreciate you sharing and underlining that, right, by pointing out that it really isn't something that we can take for granted. Just hearing is not necessarily listening. And so it's something that we need to devote ourselves to. As we start to wrap up our time together, as you've said, you're in transition. So I want to give you an opportunity. What is it that folks can do? What is the best way for them to get in touch if they would like to reach out to you? And whether it's discussing active listening or technology or mentoring or transformation, if they want to reach out and connect with you, what is the best way for people to find you?
So I'm on LinkedIn. My email is gtenniso, absent the N at the end, @gmail.com. It's greg.tennyson, like the poet, @fairmarket.com. Fairmarket is fairmarkit.com. I mean, I'd give out my cell phone, but I'm afraid what it would do to my incoming calls. But
no, you're going to be very busy, Greg. You don't have time for all of these unexpected incoming calls.
Kelly, as we've had the conversation, I firmly believe leaders need to pay it forward. And Sourcing Hero, in my mind, is the essence of that, the opportunity to pay it forward, to pay it back. So I would encourage others that have an opportunity to pay it forward. And it can be supplier diversity. It can be around sourcing. It can be around technology, people, process, whatever. I think we have an obligation to pay it forward and share with others the journey that we've been on.
Excellent. Well, Greg, thank you for sharing your point of view. Thank you for making yourself so open and sharing so much and providing so many ways for folks to get in touch. You've been an excellent guest. Thank you for spending this time with us on the Sourcing Hero podcast.
Thanks, Kelly. All the best to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.